discovering stories of courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
Life is short, I want to live it well. One life, one story to tell. Life is short, I want to live it well. And you're the one I'm living for.
As the tide of cultural trends continues to reshape our world, it's getting increasingly tough to argue that today's greatest center of power is in the hands of politicians. Instead, those trends continue to flow from the scripts produced by Hollywood's top script doctors and by films and television made by its famed actors and directors. As this reality becomes clearer and clearer, people of faith have taken steps to use their gifts to impact the cultural powerhouse that is Hollywood. And at times, it certainly seems they're succeeding when we see faith-based films shoot up the box office charts. But what is the real state of faith in Hollywood? And why is it so vital that young Christians with gifts in media production consider shining a light there? Today, we'll gain the wisdom of Barbara Nicolosi. She's a veteran screenwriter who's been working in Hollywood for over two decades on such projects as the famed The Passion of the Christ. She's also a professor in the Honors College at Azusa Pacific University, and she's founded the Act One program, which helps to equip and develop young media people of faith in their skills. So welcome to the show, Barbara. It's a real pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you for saying that. Now, I think to really set up this entire topic as we begin, I mean, could you just really lay out how this power, this pull, I guess you could say, of a story well told on a big screen or a small one has really made Hollywood the center of cultural power that it really represents in America today?
Yeah, what is it about story that is so compelling for us? And I mean, I think the reason Hollywood has so much power is because of story. And that goes back to, you know, why do we love story so much? That goes back to Aristotle. You know, Aristotle in his Poetics 2,500 years ago said there are two drives in us that are instinctual that make us want to hear stories. And one of them is this, what he called the instinct for imitation. That is, we want to watch other people who are like us make choices that we might make, that we're driven to it. Again, he uses the word instinct. So it's the same word for why a duck flies south, right? That's the thing in you that makes you want to watch and see what other people are, the choices they're making, how they're living their life, because it's the way that we learn. And number two, he says the second instinct is this instinct for harmony, that we want things to make sense. We want answers, we want meaning, and we want beauty. This harmony is all in that. And so when you go to a story, it's not like real life. You know, in fact, I say this to my students all the time, a story is great in pretty much every way it's not like real life, right? So it makes sense. It comes together. You can see cause and effect. Things that you don't get in real life, like the meaning of, you know, why did this happen to me? Well, in a story, it's usually pretty clear why, you know, and you get to travel the journey with the person through it. So, and at the end, everything kind of comes together. And then there's, you know, beauty. You have the selection of details where all of the things about character and location and dialogue and photography, they're all crafted to look beautiful, to go together. Mm-hmm. And when I say beauty here, I don't mean pretty, by the way. I mean it that beautiful in the sense of harmonious. So we're driven to stories because they give us these two things. One, we get to watch other people make choices like us and wonder what we would do. And then number two, we want things to make sense. We want things to have a meaning. And so we go to story for that. So Hollywood has power because it's the currently, and it less so every year, by the way, the industry has gotten so much diffused now outside of Hollywood, but still the main power in the culture is whoever's telling the stories. And Hollywood has been telling the stories since the 1930s.
I had a feeling that was going to be a great answer, and sure enough, it was. Your story is so fascinating, I think, because you begin your career before this faith boom in film, as it's been called, began. And of course, in the wake of the Passion of the Christ, first of all, what drew you there? I mean, what was the decision moment to pursue a career in the film and TV industry?
Well, I have the pretty much standard story of any Hollywood screenwriter. I spent 9 years in a convent, and then I went to Hollywood. And it's so passe. I don't even mention it at parties, right? You know, but no, you know, it's just kind of weird. I grew up in a really devoutly Christian Catholic family, and I went to the convent because I wanted to help the world. And the convent that I chose was one that was very engaged in media. They were publishing books and doing radio and doing television and things like that. And so I was very enthralled by that. But at a certain point, 9 years, it became clear that God was calling me to a bigger mission field. And I had a kind of Sound of Music moment. You know, my superior's crying. I'm crying. She's like, go climb another mountain, you know. So, but, you know, they were my friends, and they still are. But having said that, I came out of the convent with the awareness of really having only one marketable skill, and that was I could write well to make people laugh. I was the designated skit writer for the nuns, and I got to tell you, nuns are a tough audience, right? So I wrote an awful lot of skits for the nuns, and then I came out and I said, well, this I know I can do. And so then I went to, I threw my hat in the ring, I went to Northwestern Film School, which at the time was number 4. They only took me because they're like, wow, we've never had a nun before, you know, and so I went there, and then I got a job right out of film school because God was like, okay, we need to put you on the fast track here, and wow. So I got hired really fast, and then I worked in a development in a production company, which means I developed projects for a producer, and I read many, many scripts. And then at a certain point, I decided that the scripts that were coming to me from Christians were not bad because they had bad intentions, but that they were just bad as art or entertainment. And I started telling some of my friends that, wow, I came to Hollywood thinking Christians were being martyred here, and I found out they're committing suicide. You know, and so then one of my friends challenged me and said, well, would you help fix that? Can we do something to help the quality of the storytelling coming from Christians into Hollywood? And so hence Act One, the program, was born.
Oh, that's, I mean, what fascinating thread to follow from that story right there of Barbara Nicolosi, a veteran Hollywood screenwriter, film production pro, and a professor these days at Azusa Pacific University. And we're here on the road for Faith Radio. That story that you told at the end there about looking at the scripts that you would receive from Christians, I think is so fascinating. Mm-hmm. And you've also said that Hollywood wasn't, in your opinion, anti-Christian, it was anti-bad art. Is that one of the central misconceptions that we perhaps continue to have as a faith community?
Absolutely. It's stunning how beautiful art, beautiful work, artistic work, transcends people's agenda. And I'll give you an example of that. Early on in my career, I wrote a screenplay that was about the poet Emily Dickinson, and two producers optioned the screenplay. They wanted to make it, and it turned out they told me they were lesbians at a certain point, and they were very anti-religious in their agenda. Well, my screenplay was about Emily Dickinson's spiritual journey, and my conclusion was that even though she never officially joined the church, she was profoundly connected to God in her life. Anyway, so at one point, there's a scene where it's kind of this weird, like, artistic, mystical baptism scene, you know, that I've used in the movie, and one of them said to me, we have to talk about the scene in the basement, and I was like, oh, here it goes, right? You know, they're going to... And she said, that is such a beautiful scene. I can't wait to see that on the screen.
Wow.
And I realized right there that the same woman who had told me she didn't want anything having to do with God just couldn't resist a beautiful treatment, a beautiful, meaningful spiritual treatment, because she's geared towards the arts, right? It's what they do. So over and over, Christian work is derided in Hollywood as being banal. You know, that word we don't hear enough, but it means cheap. You know, it means easy. But what is so much of our work is like embarrassing to watch when you're with non-Christians, you know? that's the banal means. It's sure. Like the kind of thing where you go to a, you know, it's like when you go to a local high school's talent show, and all the parents are like cheering and laughing and clapping, and you're like, if a stranger walked in here, they'd be like, what is this, right? But the parents forgive it. Well, that's like the Christian community with so much of our media, and especially our movies, right? We forgive it, but the rest of the world just looks at it and says, you know, this isn't that good. So anyway, I think that the conception is that our work is getting shut out or panned or not given a fair shake because it's gospel oriented. And the truth is, my experience is no. More often than not, you know, as I said to one writer who screamed at me, you know, you don't love God, you didn't support my screenplay. I was like, I didn't support your screenplay because you didn't have a second act. You know? I mean, it's like, you know, believe me, I'm fine with the God stuff, but you know, you didn't do the human stuff.
Sure.
So there's a great expression, which is grace builds on nature. You know, grace builds on nature. And I think Christians too often are willing to they want to just jump right over the human side, right into the supernatural, divine, spiritual message, and they haven't made the connection with the audience, which is, you know, built into the human framework, right? And then we go from the human, and then we delve in and we find God in the core. But you got to establish sympathy with the audience by making them say, yeah, that's my story too, that's me there. And so this too often I think that our work just doesn't get there, you know, as a Christian community.
That is the voice of Barbara Nicolosi. She's a veteran Hollywood screenwriter, a film production pro, and a professor at Azusa Pacific University. Now, I've read your description of your time first there in Hollywood, and I've heard other people talk about it as if there was this fellowship group of Christians that you were part of that basically met in secret because you didn't want to draw too much attention to yourselves. First of all, is that a fair treatment of it, or is that too dramatic?
No, that's really accurate. In fact, when I first came to Hollywood, I figured out pretty fast, and we're talking 1996 here, but I figured out pretty fast that the only people still in the closet in Hollywood were the Christians, right? You know, and that's because it was a combination of things. One was, you know, the baby boomers were militantly, as a generation, the baby boomers were kind of militantly anti-spiritual, anti-religious,
sure.
I'm going to say. And so now you find the millennials and the Gen Xers are not so, it's not so dogmatic with them, but with the baby boomers they were. And so that was one problem. They were still in control back then. But the second thing was conviction that kind of growing in so many people that Christianity is basically what's wrong with the world, right? And so because of that, you had the Christians who were working in the industry would just, nobody would know they were Christian. But we had a couple groups where we'd go. There was one group called Intermission, which was the one that became the parent of Act One. And, you know, you'd go in and you'd walk in, there'd be like 300 other Christians from the industry.
Wow.
And you'd be like, oh my gosh, I'm not the only one. You know? And everybody would universally, you could always tell the new people at Intermission meetings because they'd be standing in the doorway crying, you know. And and so that is no longer how it is. And I think that Act One, I'm going to say, is part of why it isn't. There's a whole bunch of other organizations. But at a certain point, Christians decided that we needed to be at half as bold, you know, as say the gay community was, you know, in just saying we're here. You have to kind of own who you are, and
right.
That there are ways to do it, and you have to understand that you're in and you're in an antithetical world, and you're also in a professional world. Having said that, there are definitely, you know, there's about 10% of the people here who I think, you know, are really, you know, they do see kind of a messianic way that they need to weed out Christianity from the world.
Wow.
But most people are not. Most people are just artists, professionals, people who love storytelling and all of its different aspects, you know, hair and makeup and set construction and you know, so location scouting and casting. And they're really just here because this is the center of that world. And so I don't think that, as I was saying, in answer to the question, things have changed quite a bit. And I think that part of it was Act One's strategy was to put young people into the middle of the industry as interns. And we've been doing that for 15 years, you know, we have our students go into internships at all of the top production companies, studios, networks, and some of the small ones at the unions. And after a while, people are like, wow, these kids are really good. And so I think we were part of that. We weren't the only reason, but I think we were part of that.
It's extraordinary. It's an extraordinary story. Act One itself, I mean, we could do the whole show about that, but you know, you had such a unique perspective as we talk with Barbara Nicolosi, the veteran Hollywood screenwriter, film production pro, and professor at Azusa Pacific University, because you were closely involved in the film that, at least from the outside looking in, seemed to change so much about the way that Hollywood approached sort of faith-based content, which was, of course, The Passion of the Christ. And then for years after that, as you've talked about, you would have a Narnia and you would have a Lord of the Rings, and all of these films that were so rich in faith content would continue to shoot to the top of the box office charts. As someone who was involved and on the ground level, what really seemed to happen there in the 2000s?
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting story. But yeah, for 5 years in a row, the Christian audience saved Hollywood. You cannot understate it. That the Lord of the Rings movies, the Narnia movie, and then The Passion of the Christ. I mean, we didn't save Hollywood. We saved Hollywood by saving the theaters, right? So, you know, you had this just groundswell of people going into the theaters, and the base of it was the Christian audience was deriving this. And so that and that these were, you know, Lord of the Rings, the director, you know, swore to me up and down that he stripped the Christian, Peter Jackson, I had zero interest in the Christian themes, you know, is what he told me. And yet it's so imbued in the Lord of the Rings. You good luck, Peter, trying to strip that out of that book, right? You know, and the Narnia, you know, it was actually Disney set, you know, wanted the association with Lewis and wanted it to really be known, you know, like much. The original script for Narnia, they had left out the stone table because the writer thought it was like too much for people.
No.
You know? So Disney's like, put it back, you know. So The Passion is just, you know, such a phenomenon. Now, here's what happened. Unfortunately, everybody then, this thing to harness the audience of The Passion became a thing, right? All the film production studios, everybody had a movie that the audience of The Passion was going to love, and or they thought they were. And so then you saw this just like literally just kind of vomiting out movies that were horrible,
right?
By Hollywood that were meant for the Christian community, and they failed one after movies like Constantine and Days of Heaven, and you know, I mean, just like horrible things that didn't work. And then Hollywood started telling itself, oh well, that was just a fluke, you know, the Passion thing was just a fluke. But they did create shingles for the Christian niche audience. And I'm very ambivalent about this now, you know, the ghetto thing that we see. Because when I came to Hollywood, if you pitched a movie like Tender Mercies or Chariots of Fire, if you pitched Chariots of Fire 20 years ago, mainstream Paramount would listen to you. But if you pitch Chariots of Fire today, they're going to say to you, you know what, go downstairs to the little cheap Christian room. Hmm. They do movies for under $1 million or $2 million, and that's where that script goes now.
Wow.
So we have in this, you know, in creating what we thought was a kind of refuge or a niche, we've actually created a kind of ghetto. And I think it's ominous for us, and I'm really hoping we're going to break out of the, quote, faith-based thing. But the truth is, every good story is a work of theology, right? Every good story is a work of theology. Wow. In that it talks about what it is to be human. We don't need to kind of like have, because basically, as one of my pagan friends says to me, I love the faith-based label because it tells me what movies to never go see.
Oh, no.
I know, right? You know, and so we don't want that label. We want everything we do to have a kind of subtext that there is an invisible world, right?
Right.
That the world of spirit is there. So, yeah.
Let me follow that up. Which, thank you for that. I mean, this whole thing is so fascinating to get your insight. Just, it's so unique and so fresh. You have pointed to two recent offerings that were rich in faith-based content. One of them, the Lee Strobel biopic, The Case for Christ. The other being the reworking of, speaking of classic films, Ben-Hur. Why did one work and the other didn't, in your opinion?
No, it's a huge question. And to tell you the truth, I wish I could give seminars to every Christian who's making movies right now so that we could talk about it. First of all, why did Ben-Hur fail? Ben-Hur made the mistake of thinking that the essential attraction of movies is spectacle. It's not. It's story. This movies are first and foremost stories. It's where people go to get a good story. And so they thought, well, you know, let's pour millions of dollars into a souped up version of the chariot scene, you know, splashy costumes but in the end the story didn't make any sense. You know, they had kind of the writing wasn't good. The writing wasn't good. And this is the number one flaw of most Christian projects. If you ask me, in my opinion, the writing is bad. It lacks a cogent theme. It lacks subtext. The writing is on the, what we call it, on the nose, is an insult in Hollywood when you read a script that's earnest and you say it's really on the nose. And that is what most Christian screenplays are, right? They're really on the nose. There's nothing for the audience to do for themselves. Everything is told to them on the surface, right? So Ben-Hur thought, well, we're going to take this franchise name, which the faith-based audience is just going to be drawn to, then we're going to just make the kind of splashy spectacle, and then we'll be fine. It's like, no, it was a bomb. It got terrible word of mouth, and it didn't work. And you just like say, what happened there, right? So it was flaws in the script. Now we're going to look at Case for Christ, which, to tell you the truth, my friend had to drag me to, even though I'm really good friends with the writer. You know, he was one of our faculty at Act One, Brian Bird. I've known him for years. He's a wonderful man. Still, the Case for Christ, you know, there I go. You know, and yet I had to say, no, good characters, two storylines intersecting well, convincing, not easy. They didn't make this easy. They preserved the real struggle, and they made it a whopping good tale, right? And so this, you got hooked into the story. You wanted to know how it was going to come out, both of the storylines. So there it is. You know that in the end, making stories for us is not going to be any different than like playing baseball. You know what I mean? You know, it's like, well, I want to play Christian baseball, you know? It's like, you got to know how to play baseball. You got to know how to swing a bat and hit and catch a ball and pitch at 90 miles an hour. And the fact that you're a Christian playing baseball doesn't change the essential elements of baseball.
Wow.
And for the same thing, the fact that you're a Christian telling stories doesn't change the essential elements of a good story.
Man, that was some truth right there. And in a fresh way, anytime you can weave together storytelling and baseball, it's going to be well received on this program, Barbara. Now,
well, I'm a Red Sox fan, so, you know.
Well,
baseball's always just right there, right? So.
We understand. We know you grew up in New England, and we totally get that. So here's the thing, though. You are continuing to have this passion to equip young people and aspiring writers and all over movies and get young people excellence and bring them into Hollywood. And I know as part of that, of course, you continue to be involved in this Act One, which is just this extraordinary educational opportunity. So as we only have a few more minutes remaining because it's been such a great conversation, but as we do head out, I know you have a special opportunity coming up this summer as well.
Yeah, no, I don't teach screenwriting anymore because one of the things I encountered was, you know, even with the Act One program, the problem of the program was we had a lot of young people who knew everything about movies, but they just didn't have anything to say. They just hadn't thought any deep thoughts. And isn't that the problem with so many movies? They look great. You know, they're acted well, but they just don't mean anything, right? They don't have anything to say. So that's why I teach honors now. I teach great books. And the idea is that I'm going to find some young people who have not natural writing talent. We're going to talk about big ideas together, and then I'm going to teach them how to do screenwriting. So in August, the first week of August, I'm doing a thing that's limited to about 10 or 12 writers, and it's on my webpage. It's called storycatharsis.com. That word catharsis is an Aristotelian thing about story, but storycatharsis.com if you're interested. And basically, we'll do it's like an intense 8-day workshop where we'll take you through what writing a screenplay or a television episode or a web series, you know, what are the essential elements. And we're only going to take people that we think are good writers, that have a real chance, who are interesting people. But if you're one of those people who's like, you know, how would I ever do this? You know, you might check it out. One of the things I spent my life doing professionally is trying to bring new voices into this world that I work in because we really need new voices.
Yeah. Well, it sounds absolutely fascinating. And really, every portion of your story has been absolutely fascinating today. Barbara Nicolosi, the veteran Hollywood screenwriter, has joined us. We just appreciate your time so much, and keep up the great work. You're making a huge impact, Barbara.
Thank you so much, and please keep us in your prayers and pray for all my Hollywood people.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.